College football fans, welcome back to the College Ball Show. I'm Chris, he's Marshall, and we're here to discuss the great sport of college football. And I say this like a broken record, but this last week once again proves why it is the best regular season. You can talk about the postseason all you want, especially, you know, like the first 80 years of it. But the best regular season out of all sports, and it keeps proving you week in and week out. Welcome back to the College Ball Show. We got a lot to talk about, man. We have a ton to talk about both nationally with that LSU-Bama game, and of course, on a local level with my Minnesota Gophers beating the Penn State Nittany Lions. And within the top 15, there were a variety of really close games. Baylor, yep, I'm talking to you. Wisconsin as well, that was a really great game. And then some upsets kind of throughout the rest of the top 25. So we're definitely going to start with Week 11 recap, lots to talk about. We decided to do the show today because we wanted to get a good look at the ratings. And there's times where we may try to do one on Tuesday right after the ratings, that type of thing. But we wanted to just kind of get a look at the ratings. Where were they going to put Minnesota? How far was Bama going to go down? Who was going to move up in the fourth spot? We're going to talk it all through. But like I said, we're going to start with Week 11 recap, then kind of talk through the rankings. And then, I mean, next week, dude, there's no rest for the weary. We got a bunch of matchups. Number 4, Georgia versus number 12, Auburn. Huge game in the SEC West, or East, I should say. Minnesota has another challenge at Iowa. How many times have we talked about Kinnick Stadium? That's going to be a tough one. Big 12, I mean, this is the game of the year, really. Number 10, Oklahoma versus still unbeaten, just barely getting by, but still unbeaten. You got to give them credit. Number 13, Baylor. I mean, there is a variety of games that we're going to get into. Some games under the radar. I mean, even a ranked versus ranked Notre Dame Navy game could be a little bit interesting. But we'll definitely kind of, you know, we predict the marquee matchups, but we get into the games under the radar as well, whether it's talking about them, predicting them, kind of like the hardcore barn burner. Take a look at this game in the second half or late in the fourth quarter. It'll probably be a good matchup. Of course, we banter back and forth with the betting lines. We talk about against the spread or cover with the spread, upset specials, that type of thing. So we definitely get the gambling aspects in there, like I said, with the betting lines banter and whatnot. We usually try to cover all of that. So we definitely will. But before we get into it, if this is your first time listening to the College Ball Show, welcome. Really appreciate the listen. You can find it at blogtalkradio.com/ropeadoperadio, where you're listening right now. Or you can, you know, find it on Apple Podcasts, Player FM, Stitcher, Spreaker, really anywhere, including the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere. iHeartRadio, Spotify, you can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn or Spotify to find these shows. While you're at it, head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. It's football, it's basketball, it's boxing, it's baseball, it's everything in between. They got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu with the promo code TGT. That's betnow.eu, promo code TGT, as in the Grueling Truth. Head on over, like I said, to thegruelingtruth.net. And maybe you're thinking about cutting the cord, or you have and you're not happy. Try something that I actually personally use myself, AT&T TV Now, okay? It's a streaming cable service. It's much cheaper than your regular cable or satellite, you know, cable system. It has the 7-day free trial. However, the plans start as low as $50, HBO included. No annual contract. You can stream it anywhere. They also have the all-important cloud DVR. That's AT&T TV Now streaming cable. I'm going to go ahead and bring in my co-host, Marshall, all the way down in Texas. And, you know, of course, the second game we're going to talk about, of course, the Gophers against Penn State. We're going to start with LSU, Bama, no doubt about it. But the weather is getting cold. I realize it's mid-November, but we we had a high of like 14 or 15, real unseasonably cold. And, you know, it's going to jump back up to 40 here soon. And it was, what was it, 41 on Saturday? The day we wanted it to be 20s and cold for that game, it was 41. It was kind of weird, but that's Minnesota for you. But I'll tell you what, being that you spent some time, you know, in Minnesota, a lot of time, and obviously even Alaska, you know this type of weather, man. I'll tell you what, it's getting chilly up here, but that also means the football season is gradually getting here. We got about a month left of the regular season, including the conference finals, man. How the hell are you? And where's your head at right about now? Literally, I think a month left of the regular season. This thing feels, it can feel like a marathon when you lose and you say, hey, you got a lot left in front of you. Or when you're trying to stay unbeaten, it feels like a marathon from week to week. But really, Marshall, at the end of the day, it's a sprint.
Yeah, I like this year that's a little more of a story. Now, LSU is obviously getting pressed. They deserve. Ohio State is getting pressed. They deserve. So it's kind of a repeat of top man teams, but it's not the, okay, we got Bama and Clemson. Like, here we go again. Crap. Like, I mean, I'll admit that when Kiffin was at Bama, I was cheering for him. And, like, obviously Clemson's a very talented team. Saban might be the best coach ever. But a little bit of an aspect of the last couple of years has been like, okay, I know the regular season's fun, as you say, but besides cheering for your own team and some occasional upsets, it was like, okay, Clemson, Bama, here we go, like part two, part three. This year, that's not a guarantee at all. Now, it could still end up being a Clemson, Bama championship, but they're going to have to work a little harder for that to happen. So I'm kind of excited that we have, essentially, I would say probably 8 to 9 teams contending for the final four spots. And although a school like Utah or Minnesota would be an underdog to like an Ohio State or an LSU, it still makes for a little more excitement. You know, that it's I guess from an aspect of this, Chris, this final month should be a little more like cool. You know, we do the NBA podcast. It's like lately it's been, you know, well, Golden State Warriors going to the finals. Well, Clemson's going to the finals. Bama's going to the finals. You know,
right.
Not that, you know, if you're not a fan of those teams, it gets a little bored. Now, as a Golden State fan, I was happy. You know, our time's over now. But it's just cool to have different people in the mix. And, you know, the fact that Utah statistically right now has a 7% chance of, I think, winning the championship, and Minnesota's got a 4% chance, not many people had Utah and Minnesota in the, especially Minnesota at this point, contending for a Final Four spot. I know that Utah at the start of the year was getting a lot of love from people gambling and, like,
sure,
you know, looking big picture. But, you know, still, it's like, when's the last time Utah was ever a legit threat? That would have been the Urban Meyer time. And I know they won a bowl game, but they were still never really a national title threat. So, yes, I'm excited to see that we have a new batch of teams coming up this year. And a lot of that happened due to the whooping that LSU put on Bama. I mean, now, to show how, I would say, unintelligent and just crazy fan bases are, you know, there was on Twitter, like, half of Bama Nation was saying, get rid of Saban. You know, this is the worst Bama team I've seen in 10 years. Guy's got to go.
He's got to go.
The man's got to go. Okay.
Did you see what happened last year against Clemson? He's got to go.
I loved it. This is the worst Bama team I've seen in 10 years. Well, my God. I hope you've enjoyed the past 10 years because they've been pretty damn good. Now, if he does have to go, there's a beautiful, beautiful Oceanside house in California for USC. If he has to leave, I would love for Nick Saban to go to a good old USC. So if it's an option, so be it. But for the game itself, okay.
I don't want him to leave because I don't want PJ Fleck to leave.
So for the game itself, though, literally LSU's defense probably had their best game of the year. Okay, Chris and I, we were giving them quite a bit of crap because they deserved it. Their defense against Florida had looked pretty mediocre. Up until the Florida game, the defense had not looked that good. I think the defense is making progress. Okay, it's not the DBU crazy D-backs they normally have, but they're progressing as the year goes on, which is all I can ask for, because their offense is just on another level that most teams don't have this year. I would even say they're probably better than Ohio State, maybe not statistically in points per game due to a tougher schedule, but they got the best offense in the country.
And I agree.
It showed up again. There was literally not many plays Bama can make to stop that offense. Joe Burrow, as we mentioned talking about before the show, the offensive coordinator for LSU has been such a major change. Obviously, Burrow worked to get better, but the play calling they've made, the receivers they have, the running back they have, the dude's 22, looks like he's like 5 foot six, but it takes like four guys to tackle him.
Seriously.
Their offense is just rolling. And, okay, I know Bama's defense isn't quite as good as they normally are under Saban defense, but they're not a joke. They're not a bottom 70 defense. So hats off to LSU, another great offensive performance. The defense keeps getting better, and you win in Tuscaloosa. Coach O cried when he was being interviewed after the game. I've never seen that man cry. I mean, that had to mean so much to him, who's like an emotional, fiery, rah-rah guy like P.J. Fleck. To see Coach O cry, get interviewed on the field after the game, man, if you're an LSU fan, you had to be just partying nonstop Saturday night.
Seriously, dude, they had to be so excited, dude, especially to do it in Bama, too. I mean, that is something. And like you said, their defense, I don't think it's ever going to be that great. I do think if they can keep going on this run that they're going and then they have that month break before the semifinals, I think they could potentially do some things there, as far as scouting and you know, the coordinators that they have are pretty damn good. They have a good track record anyway at LSU, and I think you give them a month to start to, you know, and even I think it's like 13 days between the because they're not doing it on New Year's Eve day. They're doing it on the Saturday before, so that I think that'll be kind of interesting. How that works too. So I could see the defense getting better. I think the defense just makes plays when it has to. That's what it seems like it did against Texas, against Florida, against Auburn, and against Bama. And just to see them up, you know, early on, they got up 10-0, then it was 10-7, then it was 16-7, like 19-13. And pretty soon you're looking at a score at half and it's 33-13. And you're just like, holy crap. I watched the second half when I got home. I was paying attention to it at the bar that I work at, but it's not like a Vikings game or even that now a Gophers game where, you know, you actually don't spend a lot of time, let's say, when the Vikings have the ball at with your customer, you know, because they want to watch it too. You kind of during the commercial breaks, you'll jump in there and get their orders, get some new beers or drinks or whatever, and they get the hell out. So I got to see most of it that way, but I watched a good chunk of it anyway. And it seemed like, much like that Texas game and some of these other games, well, this was going to be a shootout, right? And so when they come knocking at the door and it's 33-27, well, you know, LSU would just respond. Next thing you know, it's 39-27. Then it was 39-34 after a 14-play drive. I did think they did a good job of making them work for every yard that they got. But like I said, they got it to 39-34. Boom, it's 46-34. So, you know, they keep answering the bell. You know, credit goes out to a lot of people on the offensive side. Obviously, Joe Burrow, the improvement he made, like you said. I mean, it's got to be the fit, though, too, with the coordinator. This guy should win the coordinator of the year. I don't even know if that's a category, but he should. Both teams could run the ball really well. I mean, Alabama definitely put up plenty of yards. They had a guy with 7 catches and 213 in Smith and 2 touchdowns. So they were moving the hell out of the ball and all that. But once you get down by 20 points against that offense, it's just tough. It's just really tough. And like I said, I think that they just make enough plays defensively to still be seen as a great team. And like I mentioned, that Florida game, there was times where you're like, oh, dude, they almost got a pick there. Like at some point, these cornerbacks are going to come up with something, and that's just how it's playing out. Now you look at Bama, and we'll get into the rankings and all that, but they have Auburn at Auburn. They're cheering for Auburn to beat Georgia. You know that. And we're going to talk about that game coming up too. But, man, this is going to get real. Like you said, I like how you put that. Now it'll be a little bit more organic if we do get Clemson and Alabama in the championship game because of where they're coming from. They're not the favorites this year. Even though it kind of felt like that, you know, the last chunk of years, of course, and why not, right? And two, by the way, two out of those three games were phenomenal games. So people can get bored of it. Yeah, I understand. And I think off that trilogy.
Oh, agreed.
You know, in the beatdown, though, sometimes the beatdown, I could see how people would be like, all right, dude, I think we've finished this thing out. I don't need to see a fourth fight, basically, just to say in boxing terms. We see the trilogy. We feel like Clemson has got the best out of two out of three now, and that was a butt whooping. But hey, if it happens organically this year when people don't necessarily believe it's going to happen, that's pretty freaking cool too. But yeah, this is big. And LSU, it's not like their season's done. You know, you can't just put them in the championship game just yet. Obviously, they still have a little bit of work to do. They should be good to go. You know, home game, Texas A&M, they'd have to really stumble. I just don't think A&M has the defense to hang with them. Georgia is going to be an interesting game there. The way that, I mean, they are the first to beat, was it four top 10, top 15 when they played them, I think it was top 15, maybe top 10 teams in 1 year. They have four over top 20 teams already as far as right now, too. Not the, you know, preseason rankings that kind of pre-ordered the order, you know, and we went off that order. Whereas, as we know, these playoff rankings are 2 months into the season. So I think they get in even if they lost to Georgia, as long as they, you know, end the season on the up and up regular season wise. Anyway, let's get into the Minnesota Gophers. 31-26 Gophers got off to a really good start, fast start, kept Penn State away from them, and so to speak. Then it got to like 24-19, I believe. They responded with a touchdown drive. They ran it 40 times with three different backs. They used all their backs that they have, two seniors and a true sophomore, and just ran enough. But it was that outside passing game. And I mentioned this as far as what I've seen Fleck do so far at Minnesota. Late last year, you really started seeing the moving company. The big boys, the big Midwest boys that you see at Wisconsin and Iowa, and obviously Ohio State and a plethora of other places, but especially, you know, Wisconsin and Iowa, because that is more of a comparison, not just in your own Big West division, but as far as recruiting and all that, that's what we have to try to build into those type of programs. And by no means am I saying this offensive line is up to the standard of a Badger line year in and year out for quite a long time, two decades, you know what I mean? Not saying that, but I will say this. The outside wide receivers, I can't recall a time in Tyler Johnson and Rashad Bateman, two pro wide receivers that will play. I'm not saying they're going to be Hall of Famers by any stretch of the imagination, but they're going to have good careers. You just don't say that about Iowa and Wisconsin on the outside. That's more like tight end you and, of course, running back you. So that paid dividends, I guess, is my point. And that's not to say that we're up to Wisconsin and Iowa at this point at all, because we're not. In fact, you know, I could really see the Gophers, you know, losing next week. I picked them to lose this game. But what were your thoughts on that, just watching the game? And it's so funny how all of a sudden that stadium looks so cool when it's jam-packed. You're like, oh, wow, that can be a fun place to play a little bit. And then obviously at the end to see everybody storm the field and whatnot. What are your thoughts on this Golden Gopher team getting this this W. And then, of course, like I said, we'll talk about the rankings, but they did make, and I called this, that they'd make and it was an easy call, that they'd make the biggest jump because they got ranked so low that they were obviously going to be in the top 10. What are your thoughts, though, on that game, man?
I'm happy for PJ Fleck, man. As he always says, row the boat, row the damn boat. I mean, he's a coach that so many people love to hate because he's very emotional. He always speaks with like positive, uplifting words. It's like a nonstop, like, we're going to be elite. We're going to do things the right way, like over and over again. And a lot of people view it as, all the guy's just like blowing smoke. He just says this BS. He's kind of a fake person. And the reality is no, the guy's a very motivational person that, like, nowadays, like, kids need. Like, being a hard-ass, like, a-hole coach, that really doesn't exist in sports anymore. Even in, like, high school that I see. Like, you got to build relationships with kids now, because if they don't like you, they're going to say something back. That's just kind of how things are. And he's clearly a guy that his team, like, they fight their ass off for him. And when he jumped into the locker room and, like, crowd surfed, like, at a rock concert after the game, like, dude, there's not a lot. Nick Saban's never doing that. Again, I'm not saying that Nick Saban's not a great coach, but, like, those kids love PJ Fleck. And it's cool to see that just from a coaching standpoint, for a guy that the media in Minneapolis love to give that guy crap. You're really running out of bad stuff to say about the guy, okay? Maybe you even don't still like his mantra and his personality, but if you're a Gopher fan, I think you can put aside the fact that, man, he rubs me the wrong way, but my team is winning a lot of games now. And so from that standpoint, good for him. From the game itself, it was really awesome for the Gophers to get that first play touchdown to get the lead, you know, gets the crowd into the game. But then when Penn State came back and drove and scored really easily, then I got a little scared, you know, because going into the game, we both kind of believed that that the Gophers would probably score the ball. At least I believed it. I know people were, you know, pimping out Penn State's defense, but they'd played no one all year. So I believe Gophers.
Hold on. Say they played no one. Come on now. They played Michigan, Wisconsin, and at Iowa. Calm down a little bit on that.
Okay. Well, the people had their defense like really like top end elite.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. So that's fair. They had played people, but I thought, okay, their defense, I thought, was being overvalued. Maybe that's fair to say. And part of the reason I thought they didn't have issues, because I think the defense had been covering up a lack of offense. I should rephrase that. Okay. Penn State's defense had been pretty good, but I think they'd been overshadowing an offense that struggled. So again, when I saw Penn State move the ball down pretty easily on the Gophers, and the offense is the weaker part of Penn State, then I did get nervous. I'm like, okay, the Gopher defense, maybe they're going to have a rough day today. And they kind of picked it up from the second and third quarter. They really made Penn State work. And the inexperienced quarterbacks, you could say both quarterbacks were pretty inexperienced in the game. The Gopher quarterback had a phenomenal game, over 90% completions. Now, it does help when you maybe have the best wide receiving core in the country. If the Gophers have the best wide receiving core in the country, it's top five for sure. So, I mean, obviously his completion percentage is beneficial due to the pro talent he has, but he played a smart game. The Penn State quarterback, who has had issues, in my opinion, had a rough game. Okay. When you throw three interceptions in a game, it's really hard to win a game on the road. Like, you could say the Penn State quarterback kind of let his team down. And lastly,
when you don't throw it to Winfield Jr., that's what you got to not do.
Yeah. And lastly, to kind of tack on to your point, They had a stat during the game about how the Gophers' offensive line on average, I believe, is like 6'6", about 323. The average offensive line in the NFL is 6'6", 314. Now, I get that maybe in the NFL sometimes you trim down a little bit for speed, but the fact that on average the Gophers' O-line is bigger on average than the NFL line, you're right. He has brought in some boys, like some Midwest boys that are just going to block you. And even though, Chris, football has changed in regards to, like, passing the football and being the run-and-gun flashy aspect of football, the spread and everything, you still have to win the line of scrimmage. nowadays.
No doubt.
And that's the thing I think a lot of people forget nowadays. Oh, we got to run the spread offense. Got to be flashy. Got to go no huddle. All this stuff. Even if you want to run five wide, four wide receivers, that's fine. But if your quarterback is getting knocked on his ass, it never matters. So even though we've got to the point of, okay, spread, score, like LSU has a really good offensive line. Joe Burrow's had pretty much a lot of time this year to make the plays he does. And so with the offensive line, nicely done. Yeah, very happy. That's probably the biggest win in Gopher history, or top three for sure. I know they won some national titles like 80 years ago, but very happy.
Hey, there's seven of them, buddy. You calm down a little bit, okay? There's seven of them. Not two, not one, but no, you're right. The last one was in 1961, but the biggest win since 99. Go figure, it was against an unbeaten number two squad, Penn State. Isn't that kind of funny?
Yeah, just very happy for that man, what he's doing. And I'm very happy for the Gophers. That those kids are. A couple years ago, the Gophers have always been kind of a 6-7 win team. You have an easier non-conference, and then you get a couple of wins in the Big Ten. They've elevated so much. They're eighth in the country. Not many people saw that coming, Chris. So congrats to them. And again, when your quarterback throws 90% completions, that's just a damn good game. He's done that a couple times this year.
Yeah, like he did that
two
earlier.
Two or three misses.
He did that earlier.
That is phenomenal.
Yeah, he did that earlier against Purdue, and it was the highest percentage in 40 years in the Big Ten. Now I think this is the third highest or something like that. You have to have 20 attempts, and he just hit that. Like you said, 18 to 20. Yeah, you're right about the offensive line just in general. And in the spread, I like what you said about that, because for years Oregon would – you know, go up and down the field. They didn't even need a kicker, right? They extra point. No, we're going for two. We're the Rams, early 2000s. That's what we're doing. And that's cool. Hey, it worked really well. They sold a lot of tickets. They got some tapes from a scout, you know, from Houston. We won't even go into that. But, you know, they couldn't line it up, though, when it came to goal line. Remember that Auburn game? They still got to be in their spread formation at the goal line. They still can't put the guy under center and run a normal play with some, like I said, meat and potatoes coming. And we damn sure know LSU could still do that. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I think that's a great point that you brought up. And that's exactly what I was kind of talking about, that offensive line is really starting to reminisce me of these Wisconsin and Iowa lines, and that's exactly what we have to do. And Fleck was a wide receiver, so you generally know that the head coach, whatever the head coach did, you're probably going to have a lot of those positions. You know, like look at Zimmer. Yeah, they're having some problems now, but he's had a lot of good corners, you know, in his program, because he was a defensive, you know, that was defensive backs was his thing. And the wide receivers right now, I mean, that Rashad Bateman, 7 targets, 7 catches, 201. It's the second biggest game ever. And only 2 have gone over 200. And this was not in a crappy game where you're beating them 52-10. You know, this was in a legit game that came all the way down to the last minute. So, and Bateman, you know, he's from Georgia, Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, you name it. Everybody wanted this guy, and Fleck got him. And now almost every week he tweets stuff like, hey, I'm not from here, but I'm from here. You know what I mean? And it's just like the guy's talking like he's just going to live here, you know, like he wants to move his kid, you know, his family here when he gets older and stuff like that. Like it's crazy, dude. It is crazy. And just a great win. And I knew it would come all, you know, some local people were like, oh, you almost gave the game away. Did you really think this was going to be a blowout or something? Like, come on. This is how it comes in these games. It comes right down to the wire. Even LSU had a 20-point lead, and it's still 46-41. You know, you didn't feel like they were going to lose. But anyway, we'll move on. Like I said, Gophers got a big, big game coming up. But, yeah, it's just – 12 in a row dating back to last year. It's just, this, or 11 in a row. just silly, dude. This stuff is just silly right now, and I'm loving every second of it. And tell me that extension did not come in good timing. We signed an extension like 3 days before the game, and that's not to say he won't go anywhere, but this end of the season and next end of the season, it'll cost $10 million to get him out of here. So that'll help us, you know, just to earmark that money from your athletic department tells you you now have money to pay quality coaches. Even if Fleck leaves, you know what I mean? You'll have the money earmarked, and you'll have an extra $10 million, maybe a signing bonus, maybe spread that out, put a little bit on top of it, and get another quality coach. And so I think that's, you know, I want him to stay here for a decade, but, you know, we've watched a lot of football, and you just know that that doesn't always stay that way. Two games I want to talk about and get your take about: Oklahoma and Iowa State. When Iowa State is unranked, they are a better team this year. It's just the bottom line. They almost got it done. I want to get your take on that last play. Should you have gone for the two? Should you have went to overtime? Are you thinking, man, this overtime system, the skilled players they have, it's going to be tough to deal with it. Let's just go Boise State in a sense anyway, not like they're doing a bunch of trick plays. But Oklahoma did sneak it out. Their offense is hot garbage once again. I think they worked on a couple things in the offseason, and people just caught up to it, and now they're like, all right, you're back to hot garbage on the defensive side. But they can move the ball. 42-41, they get that. And then also Wisconsin holds off, you know, a comeback, almost come from behind win, you know, with Iowa. Iowa has been in these games that are just, that's what's making me nervous about this next game, you know, because they've been knocking on the door against Michigan, lost 10-3, 17-12 to Penn State. This one, 24-22. And hey, we beat Vegas on that one because that was up to 9.5, I believe, by the end of the week. I think it started at 8.5. What do you think of those two games, sir?
I don't quite still get Oklahoma's offensive identity. I mean, Jalen Hurts again ran the ball 22 times. It's not like they don't have a talented wide receivers. I know they lost Hollywood Brown, but I just don't quite get the game plan. I mean, when Hurts, I know it's different schools, but when Hurts was at Bama, he was kind of a pass-first guy for Saban, kind of a pocket guy, and then run when he had to. I feel like they're either Oklahoma doesn't have a running back, or the game plan literally is Hurts, you're going to run the ball 20 times, pass the ball 20. Something doesn't quite seem to be clicking there, you know? Even with, I mean, Baker and Kyler, like I don't recall there ever being this heavy of a load on a quarterback to run the ball, and I obviously that makes the guy tired. I mean, he ran the ball 22 times last game for 68 yards. Like, that's really not even a good clip.
That's official running it too, not to count the scrambling. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I just don't quite get the game plan of Oklahoma's offense. And obviously it's stupid to doubt Lincoln Riley. I mean, the guy has obviously put together many great offenses, but I'm just, something right there just seems a little off. Maybe they are trying to maintain the time of possession because the defense is coming back to earth. But I don't know. I heard a couple of stats and I wish I could remember them, but the amount of time he's ran the ball for them, it's like the whole team is based around him. And I don't think that's going to lead you to victories if you were to make the final playoff. You know, I think it's something like you got to spread the ball more. Something,
yeah, let him hand the ball off, for Christ's sakes.
Give him a breather, let him throw the ball. I mean, hell, if you got to throw the ball to CeeDee Lamb 20 times a game, let him do that. That guy last game again had 8 catches, 167 yards. Why not make that 12 catches for 200? I don't know. I think that the offensive game plan, something doesn't seem to be quite right, and I think that's the one issue. Now, again, they did score 42 points, but they were up in this game pretty comfortably. They were up 35-14 at halftime, and then in the fourth quarter, you beat 20-0. So, again, something wasn't quite clicking. Again, against K-State, the game they lost, they were up 17-7.
Right.
Second half, they got – so –
I mean, shit, I can't blame her. Church probably is tired when you're on the ball 22 times. So,
that's a lot of shots on the quarterback, man. And like you said, if you've handed off, then it gives the defense something else to think about. Then he can, you know, jet off and hold and keep it sometimes instead of, well, he's keeping it all the time, basically.
Yeah, I mean, with Kyler Murray, it literally was, okay, this dude's going to run and scramble, but it wasn't really drawing plays. It's like, okay, Kyler Murray, go out and look for a pass. If it's not there, do it on your own. This year, it's literally, okay, Jalen, go run. I don't know. Something just doesn't seem to click. Obviously, we're not the coaches. When those guys are smart people, and they can make a lot of money. Lincoln Riley is an intelligent coach, but I've never seen a quarterback have such a high workload, and that's probably going to hurt you in bigger games. And if you do make the Final Four, you're not going to be able to do that against an Ohio State defense, or even, I mean, hell, LSU. If you want to get into a shootout with them and you want to get your quarterback tired, fine. LSU is really going to – you better score 60 against them, you know. So, I don't know. And Iowa State, that's a tough loss. You know, they were the team that beat Baker with the third-string quarterback a couple years ago. They get down big at halftime. They fight back. And we've had this debate a lot of times, Chris. Going for the win, again, you look smart if you get it. Obviously, I'm sure every coach has a play dialed up in their playbook. I just always feel bad because from the devil's advocate part, you know, your players have done so much, and now you're relying on one play to determine it, you know. There's got to be that empty part of your stomach where if you don't get it, it's like, man, why were we not in overtime? Like, we did so much, and now we have one play. And I know it's only 2 yards, but those 2 yards, a lot of stuff happens there. You know, but if they hit it, you know, we're giving them massive props. So you're on the road. You know, as you said, Oklahoma's obviously got a good offense too, but you had the momentum. I can't say it's a dumb call or a good call because we've had this debate many times on the show. So I'll always support the idea. It's unfortunate they didn't get it, and that's a tough loss for Iowa State. And, man, they were expected, Chris, to do pretty high things this year. But now they're 5-4, 3-3 in conference, maybe a little bit of a knockdown on the pedestal for Coach Campbell and the team. I mean, what he's done there is amazing, but I don't think many Iowa State fans had their team at 5-4. It's got to be kind of a disappointing season for a team that had been really moving up very effectively in the rankings the past 3 to 4 seasons.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, we talked about, you know, the wide receiver and running back that they lost last year. And, yeah, they're obviously still a game team and all that. I think they should stick the course and all that. I mean, if anybody's freaking out, that's silly. But, yeah, it's just one of those things, man. It is a heartbreaker. And same with Iowa now. 3 times in a row, they've gone against ranked teams and just barely. In fact, the only team that they beat, I think that was ranked, was actually Iowa State by a point. Wasn't that 18-17?
Yeah.
I think it was 18-17. What are your thoughts on that? Wisconsin just said, hey, Taylor, I know you can run the ball. You want to run it for 250? Okay, let's win.
He's just a guy you got to feed. I mean, he's – maybe the best running back in the country, probably. I mean, I don't know every running back in college, but that dude is so talented and so gifted. He's going to be a very good running back for a team in the NFL. He's going to be very beneficial. I think Wisconsin's defense is not quite the phenomenal defense we saw at the start of the year, shutting out, you know, pretty low-ranked teams, but they're obviously still pretty respectable. Wisconsin's always going to put up a pretty good fight on defense. It's always tough to win in Madison. And I think, Chris, the issue for Iowa really just has been their offense. I mean, Kirk Ferentz has a pretty damn good defense this year. He really, as a head coach, can't be mad with his defense. But in the big games this year, Iowa scored 22 points against Wisconsin. 22 is not a joke, but it's not that great for college. You scored 12 points against Penn State and lost. You scored 3 points against Michigan. So in your 3 conference losses, you've scored 35. You've scored 37 points total. Like, the Iowa defense is probably pretty pissed. Like, if you're averaging 12 points a game in your big games, that's a lot, Chris. So I, as a Gopher fan, I'd be intrigued for that. Okay, you're going to have to grind to score. But Iowa's offense really has not got on rhythm this year, and I think that's just the main issue. They can't. When you average under two touchdowns a game, you're not going to win many games in college football.
Yeah. I mean, even in pro football nowadays, when you got to the end, though, that the games did get a lot closer and low scoring. But, yeah, you're right, man. That's a good point. Their offense has failed them. And, well, I won't even get into it because I'm going to have to knock on wood this whole prediction segment for – or not the segment, but for the freaking Iowa game because you know, I hate to say it, but, you know, I've been watching too much college football to just assume, oh, yeah, dude, we got Iowa, no problem. Kinnick, yeah, we got it, no problem. Oh, they're loosey-goosey? Oh, they have nothing to worry about? Oh, yeah, that's a great way to walk in there. Oh, a hangover game? Yeah, it's like the definition of a hangover game. But anyway.
And I didn't know y'all haven't won there in 20 years.
You had to do it, didn't you? You had to do it. We've only beat them four times in the last 20 years. And all of them were at home, you know what I mean? So, yeah, dude. Yeah. We had a couple more almost inside the top 15. Like I mentioned, Baylor, another overtime, this time triple overtime over TCU, who showed up. They're like the hit or miss game, the whole theme we've been talking about. In the Pac-12, not so much like that, but the Big 12, which team's going to show up? And case in point, Texas now ranked, beat the previously ranked Kansas State, 27-24, coming off a big win, I should say, by Kansas State, you know, going in and beating Oklahoma. So that was a big win by Texas. They needed it badly. You know, they weren't doing so hot. Boise State found a way to get done against Wyoming, 20-17. SMU and East Carolina, we know, putting up all those points last week. We mentioned those stats. They gave SMU a hell of a run, 59-51. So there, like I said, there was a variety of, you know, really competitive games. Oh, that's what I meant. Wake Forest got beat at 19. They were 7-2. They got beat by Virginia Tech, 36-17. And for whatever reason, Virginia Tech is just a tough out. I had them as a tough out this week, thinking that they could, you know, probably win or at least be a grind it out game. And sure enough, they got the job done on not a local front because that's the Gophers, but on a team I follow, Miami. Speaking of hit or miss this year, you don't know what you're going to get. They just blew Louisville out of the water, and Louisville's played some pretty good teams close. Notre Dame at the beginning of the year put up I think they put up the most points they have in the ACC in an ACC game with a redshirt freshman quarterback, but by the way, had six TDs, a school record. And they tied the ACC record. So, I mean, hell of a performance by my Miami squad. We'll just see if they can carry it in. Well, we got this weird bye again because, you know, remember the NCAA talked Florida and Miami to go a week early, you know, and week zero. And it messes you up because you don't want bye weeks that early. You had to – it's like forces you to take a bye week the week later, and then you get your natural two byes in a sense. And so now we're just getting going. All right, three in a row. Oh, you know what? There's a bye. We don't need it, though. You know what I mean? So yeah. It kind of sucks. But it'd be nice if they could win out and finish 8-4, and then all of a sudden you go, okay, well, 2 years ago they got to 11-0 and then, you know, lost some games in a row and whatnot. And that was kind of the peak of what had been built the last 2 to 3 years. Well, man, it's a really young team going into next year. Any other games you want to talk about, or obviously, you know, some home front stuff, some fan stuff that we, some teams we follow?
This is going to sound crazy, but if games of the week, I would give, obviously, you know, LSU the third place trophy. I'd give your Gophers second for bias, but for actual comeback games, like Illinois deserves the gold star of the week. They were down.
Good call.
They were down 28-3. They had been getting slammed on defense, and the play going into halftime, they threw a 50-yard. Well, I mean, it wasn't a Hail Mary because it was in single coverage, but a 50-yard touchdown pass. So they take, you know, some momentum. You know, Illinois is down 28-10. They come back in the third quarter. Michigan State scores 3 points, so it's 31-10. Illinois scores 27 points in the fourth quarter and knocks off Sparty. What a awful, awful loss by Sparty. That is beyond hideous. But props to Illinois, man. They were a team where, you know, Lovie Smith was on the hot seat this year. They had a game against Michigan where I heard a lot of people say, man, they lost the game, but they showed a lot of fight coming back against Michigan. Next week, they beat Wisconsin. They win a game after that. Now you're down 28-3 on the road. And I know Michigan State's not great this year, but not many teams got the heart, Chris, to come back from 23 in college, period. Or high school, or pro, whoever the hell it is. They pulled I saw a really good tweet. It basically, they pulled the New England Patriots. I forgot that was the score of the Super Bowl when it was 28-3 Falcons and Patriots. So,
yeah, that's right.
Lovie Smith and his badass, like, white Christmas beard pulled off a massive comeback, and just credit to them, man. I know this game doesn't affect the national impact like Alabama LSU did, but if you're down 25 points and you win a game, like, that's awesome part of sports. I've been watching the game on my phone for updates because I put it in a teaser, and I was like, man, I'm down 28-3. This teaser's not looking good because they were a 14-point dog, so... Gold star of the week. I know everyone will pick LSU or Minnesota. Gold star to Illinois. And they're now going bowling. So you're going from firing your coach to beating Wisconsin and Sparty, and now you're going to a bowl game? That's pretty damn cool. So that's my little celebration for the week. USC beat Arizona State. In typical USC fashion, we score 28 points in the first quarter, and then we have to make things interesting. We win. We score 3 points for the rest of the game. Thankfully, we hold on to beat Herm Edwards 31-26. And with all the dice falling the way they did, Lane Kiffin won, too. So Lane Kiffin won. The Gophers won. USC won. The only thing
Miami
that didn't happen.
Yeah, man, let's just shut down the season right now.
I know. The only thing that didn't happen, I predicted it. I told you on the podcast a couple of times, Missouri never, ever, ever beats Georgia.
Yeah, you told us.
It was 27-0. That was also my teaser.
Hey, what was
shocked.
The spread? What was the spread, though?
14.
Okay.
So the only part, the damn New Orleans Saints cost me a potential $800 of they didn't want to play football like the Illinois Illini did or the frickin' Hurricanes or anyone else. The damn New Orleans Saints cost me a lot of money. But anyways, I digress. Credit to our teams that we love. Credit to Illinois.
Yeah.
And that is, I believe, all I got, sir. But, man, what a fun-ass week of football. That was some good stuff.
It really was. I mean, it was phenomenal, not just because of the Gophers, but that had something to do with it, obviously.
Sure, and sure.
I like to give, talk a little stats. It might be a little Gopher heady, but there are other stats out there. A couple of them kind of hit home with what you're saying about an underdog coach, too. But anyway, the last time the Gophers were 9-0, Teddy Roosevelt was the president. And by the way, the U.S. had 5 less states than it did. Just a little, just so you know, that's 1904 is what we're talking about there. This is the first Gopher victory against a top 5 team at home since 1977. That was a 16-0 win against Michigan. It's their 11th straight win. That's the third longest in the nation. 7 straight Big Ten games scoring 30 points or more, which is a pretty damn good. Now, you know, we can look at the schedule, of course, there. But 28 points in the first 9 games is a school record, but here's where it gets interesting. Okay, so we're talking about against the spread and all that. PJ Fleck has won 6 consecutive games as an underdog, and I know you like to talk about that with your guy at the USC, and we talked about that with other coaches too. Just 9 coaches in the past 40 years have done that. 6 consecutive, and just in general, 14-3-1 against the spread like that, but 6 in a row now that he's won when his team is in an underdog position, basically.
Let me state for the record that when Chris mentioned USC as an underdog, that is due to my coach sucking I believe Clay Helton's like 2-15 as underdog. So that was not a comparison of compliments. That was saying PJ Fleck wins as underdogs. Clay Helton does the complete opposite.
And he does argument. With lesser talent too.
Yes.
That's for sure. There was some huge games though. Speaking of Baylor, their linebacker Terrell Bernard had 19 tackles. I think 7 of them solo. Had a sack, key sack, and an interception too. He had a big game. There was another one here. Oh, well, of course, Joe Burrow, you know, the Heisman Trophy front runner, at least he should be, had another 3-TD game. He now has 7. That's the most in LSU history. And LSU put a halt to Alabama's 31-game winning streak in a row. Go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was just going to say, my one side note for Baylor, their quarterback is not that good. If their quarterback was, like, really good, they would be a legit team with a chance to go to the Final Four. Like, but Charlie Brewer, I've watched him a couple times now, like, that Matt Rhule is one of the best coaches in college football. We've talked about coaches a lot today. That dude came into Baylor, who was in just a complete mess due to what had happened with Browse before.
About as much as mess as you can get.
Yes.
Too.
That dude came
We were into, even saying, I'm glad they're getting their ass kicked on the field.
Yeah, and I think his first year he went 1-11 or 2-10. Last year I believe was 6 or 7 wins. Now his team's 9-0. I just wish if he had a great quarterback, man. That's the only knock on that team. And I kind of want to. I have a basketball tournament I'm coaching this weekend, or I would totally drive an hour because Oklahoma is going to Baylor this night. We'll get to that game, but man, I think that quarterback's going to hurt him. Baylor's a hell of a team. Great defense, another gritty overtime win. They've now beat Texas Tech and TCU in overtime. So the team's got heart, but yeah. Their quarterback just isn't that good.
Well, there we go.
In my opinion, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. I've heard that a couple times. I've seen it, and, yeah, that seems to line up. So instead of talking about rankings, let's get to it. We're 50 minutes in the show. We're going to talk about rankings, but we're just going to get into these predictions because we have so many of them. And, of course, we can't forget the crafty, crappy pick of the week, and that is a pick where my co-host, Marshall, literally throws a game at me, the worst matchup of the week. And, boy, let me tell you, some of these are just horrible, god-awful, but they turn out to be good games sometimes. So we'll do that to close the show per usual. But just to keep it going, just to keep the mojo going, we're going to go in twos on this one. We have number 4, Georgia, and number 12, Auburn. Big game coming up. Auburn, you know, just got that win over Florida. Looks like they have the track going, you know, pretty healthily to get to the conference final. But as far as, you know, just moving up to 4, it would be good for them to keep winning, right, to stay in that spot. They obviously have the LSU game. If you're going to take an L, you'd probably want to have it come by the hands of LSU, you know, rather than Auburn. So we'll talk about that. This is like the deep, as far as the deep South, this is the oldest rivalry dating back to 1892. I didn't totally realize that. And then we'll also talk about number 10, Oklahoma, and number 13, Baylor, since we were on that. And that is some of the marquee matchups. We'll talk about a variety of other ones too, and games under the radar and hardcore barn burners. We'll get into the betting line banters. Maybe you could take a flyer out on this game. I feel like they're going to cover. I feel like they'll sneak under the spread, that type of stuff, upsets of the week and whatnot. But as far as Georgia-Auburn, Auburn's schedule has just, you know, forced them to face like a murderer's row, as we know. And, you know, they're looking for another signature victory to go around, you know, to go along, well, this time in conference rather than the non-conference Oregon. So they're, you know, whereas, you know, like I mentioned, Georgia got that nice win. It looks like they have pole position for the SEC East. You can't really compare stats because of how brutal Auburn, their schedule's been. But both of them run the hell out of the ball. And that's what this thing's going to come down to. It's really hard not to think that running the ball right, is going to come. It's going to come down to that. But obviously, who's under center? You have Jake Fromm, who's been in numerous big games now, or you got Bo Nix, who's still trying to figure it out. And I just don't think they're at home, right? They are at home, but I just see Georgia sneaking this one out. I think it's going to be a grinded out game. I got it 20-19. I'll let you pick that game, and then you can go into the Oklahoma-Baylor game and then flip it back to me, sir.
Sure. Neither quarterback is that good. Now, Fromm is better. I mean, but I saw this Auburn defense play their butts off to hang in with LSU, and they did all they could, but Bo Nix couldn't get the offense really going until very late, and it never really was a game. I know the scoreboard looked close for LSU-Auburn, but the offense just really struggled to get into rhythm. I think the same thing happens again. Now, it does help that it's in Auburn. Obviously, in college football, as everyone knows, the home field advantage is huge, especially for a quarterback's confidence and all that stuff. But, man, Georgia's quarterback's a little bit better. Georgia's defense is probably a little bit of a notch down compared to Auburn's. But I think you nailed just the quarterback play really is the determining factor in my mind. Is Bo Nix going to be able to make some big plays? I mean, that defense is going to make Georgia work. I don't see Fromm doing much against Auburn, but he just has more experience. So I think that determination alone is the reason why I would pick Georgia. And also, I think that's the reason why Georgia's favored. Georgia's favored by 2.5 points in Auburn. That's normally not going to happen when you have the 4th-ranked team versus 12th-ranked team, but I think that lack of experience in a big game quarterbacks is going to cost Auburn, and I'll take Georgia to win. I'll go 24-20, Georgia. For Texas and Baylor, as I just said, Oklahoma has a much better offense. Okay, that's no one, because I just don't believe Brewer is a great quarterback for Baylor. He's okay, but he's not great. So I think Oklahoma is going to be able to score like usual. And to me, the question will be, Baylor's going to score against Oklahoma's defense anyways, because Oklahoma's defense ain't that good. I just think for picking the game, though, I think you got to go Oklahoma. I just think that if you get into a shootout, you're asking a lot of a Baylor quarterback who I just don't think can match play for play with Jalen Hurts. I'd say the only advantage, Chris, now I'm going to stick with Oklahoma. I'll make that for my pick. But I think the only advantage you have as a Baylor person is if Lincoln Riley again decides to have Jalen Hurts run the ball 25 times.
Right.
Like, if you want to get in the habit of getting up early and then having a quarterback run the ball religiously, it almost hurt you this past week, and it hurt you against K-State. So I'm not quite sure that what's going on there. The point spread is 10 points. I would take Baylor plus 10, but I think Oklahoma wins the game.
Yeah, I'm right there. I actually have it 34-30 is what I'm looking at. And both of them have been in tight games of late. Obviously, obviously they lost one Oklahoma 2 weeks ago to a solid team, though. It is going to be in Waco, so it's definitely going to be a Big 12 shootout. Classic, good old-fashioned Big 12 shootout. You know, like you said, I just think they've had a very successful run, but they've just slipped by some pretty good teams. Nothing like what they're going to face with Hurts and CD Lamb. So I'm there with you. I like Oklahoma over Baylor. Let's go to number 8. God, it just sounds weird saying that. Number 8, Minnesota. I can safely say that they've never been in the top 10 since I've been alive, and I'm not 22, let's put it that way, or 32. Number 8, Minnesota versus number 20, Iowa, okay? Obviously, ton of meaningful games this week, so this one's flying under the radar a little bit. I do think the casual fan here that loves the Vikings but is just now showing up for the Gophers is going to, like, if they lose this game, they go, oh, same old Gophers, and not realize how difficult this game is going to be. You have the hangover You have the almost that Iowa has had in three of these games we mentioned against ranked opponents. You have, I mean, Kinnick Stadium, I could bring that up four different times. You know, the only thing is this year, the Hawkeyes, like you said, their offense, really it's their run game. They do not have the run game that they normally do. It's like right around 139 a game, which if you're in the pros, that's solid, but this isn't the pros. And obviously we know the pig named Floyd of Rosedale will be, you know, on display. Like I said, though, it has the hangover for the Gophers written all over it. I have it 19-16, unfortunately, with my Minnesota Gophers going down to Iowa. What says you, sir?
I was going to pick Iowa if it was at night, but the football TV marketing gods were nice.
I wonder why.
The game is at 3 o'clock. One of my gambling shows I listened to, I heard a pretty high and respectable gambler say that he thinks that Kinnick at night is almost a 6-point advantage, which is mind blowing for home field advantage. Thankfully, the game is not at 7 o'clock. If it was at 7, I think the Gophers would really have their hands full, but the game is at 3 o'clock.
It's at 3, but by the time with daylight savings, that shit, half of it's going to be in the dark.
I think that's a nice advantage. That's a huge thank you from the TV gods. I think the Gophers find a way to get it done. I do think that the hangover factor could apply, but you have a coach who's a great motivator, and they're still in the fear mindset, in my opinion, of we still have nothing to lose. It would be different if the Gophers were 6-3 on the year and just upset Penn State. But you're 9-0 for the first time in forever, in a century. I don't think the hangover factor happens. I just think you keep riding the wave until someone beats you, and you're playing against a team who struggles to score offensively, and you have an offense that has one of the best wide receiving cores in football. Maybe I'm drinking the PJ Fleck Kool-Aid, but I don't think he allows the hangover to occur. And I think that Gophers are going to score points. I know Iowa's defense is good, but they probably haven't played a team this year with the offensive talent we have. So I think if the Gophers can score 24 points this game, I don't see them losing. So I'm going to say Gophers 24, Iowa 16, and the streak continues, and they're 10-0 going into next week.
And I hear you on that, but I guess what I'm saying is, especially the earlier games, the scooping scores, the getting hit while you're throwing the ball.
Sure.
That type of thing is what's going to lose this game. It won't be because they can't put up points maybe they're not going to put up 30 because this is a damn good defense. But and part of it's just like I said last week, I love these bets or these predictions because, I got it wrong. Dang, man, that really pisses me off that I got that pick wrong. Oh, geez, dang, too bad, you know. But knock on wood. But that's what I think. I think it's going to be – because every team has the hangover effect. PJ Fleck, Saban, whoever, they all have been hungover.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I just think it's going to be a couple of things. He says the program is the ball, and I feel like that ball might be on the ground a couple times, and it's going to be stuff like that happens, but who knows? There is another ranked team, number 16 Notre Dame versus number 23 Navy. As long as Notre Dame keeps Malcolm Perry, the do-it-all triple option guy from Navy, you know, if they can keep them 200, 225 yards rushing under that, they average 358. So that would be a win. I think that at some point they'll pull away. There's a couple other games, you know, that we're kind of just putting a flyer out or feel really confident about. Right now, Wyoming has been better lately. I'm picking them to upset Utah State as a 6-point road underdog. Some hardcore barn burners. Hey, Penn State, speaking about being hungover and kicking rocks, they're playing Indiana. And Indiana can put up some points. You just never know. They've won four straight, you know. It could be a sneaky good game. Then you have number 19 Texas, who's ranked now, going against Iowa State. Man, Iowa State's had a rough run. But desperation tends to equate in good-ass games. So I'm thinking Texas and Iowa State will be a pretty damn good game. Now, as far as against the spread, I think I'm with you on the Baylor. The 10 points that Vegas claims, I think Baylor will fall underneath that. And Clemson has been burning me, I think it's three times in a row in these against the spreads, because they've been blowing everybody out. Wake Forest is a 33.5-point underdog. I think they can sneak under that as far as against the spread. However, I just got news that their number one wide receiver, I think he's got 1,000 yards, is out. So maybe you should take a flyer out on that. My easy money take it to the window is Pittsburgh covering at home as a 5.5-point favorite to North Carolina, sir.
For my favorite pick, I'm going with, let me find where it was, Texas Tech. -3. Oh, crap. I was literally just looking at the stand game. Yeah. Texas Tech -3. Let's go Big 12 here quick. With TCU. Okay. TCU's had they played Texas a couple weeks ago. They just had a battling game with Baylor. They lost it. They've had a quarterback that's been hurt. Their quarterback and their offense really isn't that smooth. Now, obviously, Gary Patterson's always going to have a great defense. Okay, TCU is always going to play tight-nosed defense. But I just think Texas Tech's a better team. Texas Tech went up to West Virginia and smoked them. They've been playing, good football for a first-year coach, or for Clingsbury. I just think Texas Tech, and they're at home, and they're only being -3 points. When you have a better quarterback, you have home field advantage and a better offense, I'll gladly take you -3. And TCU, they're kind of due for a letdown spot. They've been having quite a few emotional games in the past month. So my take it to the bank money bet is Texas Tech -3. And obviously, if you're a gambler, buy the points and a half, get them -2.5, taking a little juice. But yeah, that -2.5 is always a better bet than having that 3-point field goal kind of hurt you or make you push your bet. A interesting line, Chris, if you are, an Ohio State fan, they're a 52-point favorite against Rutgers, and the over-under 61. It is really rare to see.
That's crazy.
It's rare, and I believe the over-under opened at like 57. So they were a 51-point favorite with a 57-point over-under. It's really rare to see an over-under and a point spread almost be within 10 points of each other or less. I know earlier this year, Alabama was like a 51-point favorite against New Mexico State. It was kind of the same situation. But if you're betting Ohio State this week, you got to take 52 points. Now, if they want to, they could easily score 52. Hell, they scored 71 this past week against Maryland. So the offense is there, but if you're an Ohio State gambler, I would that over and under and
the points off
it. It's kind of a mess. You might want to stay away from that a little bit. That's just crazy to see. I don't know. It's rare that you'd see those numbers so tight next to each other. Besides that, like I said, the Texas Tech really jumped out at me. And also, my other pick, I don't think Washington State has business being a 10-point favorite to anyone. They ever since that UCLA game where they blew that huge lead, they've been crumbling. They got smoked by California last week, and California's offense has been really bad ever since they lost their quarterback. And Washington State's -10.5 against Stanford, I know that Wazoo at home, Mike Leach, all that stuff, but all those kind of special plays, all that fancy part of their offense has kind of disappeared. They really don't have the run and gun offense, or if they do, they're just not winning games this year. So I would love Stanford getting 10.5 points against a team that's been in a nosedive now, Chris, for about the past 5 weeks.
Yeah, that's fair. I'm looking at hardcore barn burners, ASU and Oregon State. ASU a 3-point favorite. They've kind of fallen out of the ranks. That's going to be a good game. And then South Carolina, sure, they're 4-6 compared to 6-3 A&M, but 10.5 points, I'm looking at that, I'm saying, I don't know. I'm not totally sure. You know that that take it to the window, and this is full disclosure here, okay? Take it to the window. I wrote this down yesterday, and it was 5.5. Pitt is favored by 4 now. So maybe, just maybe, there's some smart money coming on North Carolina, and maybe I should reevaluate my take it to the window. But I'm just putting that out there, full disclosure, okay? Anything else that you want to get to before we get to these rankings, and then we shut this puppy down with the crafty, crappy pick of the week, sir?
Oh, my God. I just saw some, holy shit.
Got a really bad one?
Oh, God. Well, I can't pick. We'll discuss it. I can't use it, but we'll discuss my made me laugh.
All right.
No, I'm good to go. Let's do rankings. Let's do the – God almighty. Let's do the crafty, crappy pick of the week. You're going to laugh. Anyways, no, let's go on to rankings, brother. What do you got?
Well, last week we didn't talk about it, but last week – I was a little troubled with the 17 ranking for the Gophers only because the two lost teams. Now, Wisconsin, and maybe this is just Homer stuff, you know, whatever. But Wisconsin had lost Ohio State. They got their ass kicked. That's no big deal. They also kicked Michigan's ass, you know. But their loss, they had two losses, and one of the losses, it's not like Auburn losses or some other teams' losses that they're both solid. One is to Illinois, who's a good team, but they lost to them. And at that time, they weren't 500. And now they are. So that's good. They got 6 wins. So that is good. But we beat up Illinois, we meaning the Gophers. And Wisconsin did. They lost to them. So to me, I think that they shouldn't be in front of us based off that. And they were 4 spots ahead. So a couple of those 2 lost teams, I thought, okay, that's a quality win, but then again, you got the – so that was a little weird to me. I did like – I thought LSU last week should have been the number one team. That was really my biggest problem there. Obviously, we're not going to talk about last week because that's in the past. I'll stop. LSU number 1, Ohio State number 2, Clemson number 3, Georgia number 4. I don't have a problem with that. I'm so glad. Like I said, LSU should have been the number one spot before the Bama game. But is this a battle for fourth? Is that what it's coming down to? Georgia lost to a team with a losing record. Alabama doesn't really have a quality top 25 win. Or not doesn't really. They don't have a top 25 win as of right now, who's in the top 25. But they got a really great loss. Oregon, their only loss, as we know, is to Auburn. But do they have a quality win yet? A really quality win? Like, Washington's a good team, but we know they've taken a step back. So I look at that and go, that's wishy-washy. Utah and Oregon are going to play each other, so that'll help right there. And right now, Minnesota and Utah is scheduled to meet in the Rose Bowl, which would be so phenomenal for the Gophers to go to Rose Bowl. So I really, the only thing from 4-7, what do you do there? And then I get, you know, the non-conference for the Gophers, much like Baylor, was not good. And some of the early teams that they beat, Minnesota, you know, they just weren't that good besides now Illinois, I guess you could say, because they got 6 wins or whatever, but that's still not a ranked team or whatever. But we have the committee ranked Penn State 4th, the committee. Not me, not you, the committee did. So if you think about it, the Gophers have the second best win in the nation behind LSU. I'm just talking wins here, okay? One win, not numerous like LSU has. So where do you stand from 4 to, say, 8? That's going to be that's where a lot of the stuff's playing out, obviously. But that's where the mess will be.
I think that the reputation, like, kind of stereotype that committees normally got maybe's finally drifted away. Cause I would say a couple of years ago, Bama would for sure be four. Like, it would be a no-brainer. Like, okay, they're Bama.
So right.
Maybe they've gotten past the, well, we got to look at the name on the helmet. Now, the fact that Georgia's above them. Now, I'll admit, you know, if we're comparing losses to losses, that can't be the reason. Because Georgia was a damn 23-point favorite at home and lost to South Carolina, who just lost to a League 5 team. Like, you know, Georgia's got a shitty loss. And Bama, yeah. their bad loss is to, I believe, 4 points to the team who's best in the country. Now, I know that's at home as well, but LSU is a much better opponent than South Carolina on the road. So I think maybe the special powers of names has maybe gone away, which I would say is a good thing. Do you agree with that?
Because Georgia has Notre Dame and Florida as wins? Do you agree with Georgia being okay right there?
I guess you could say that Georgia's wins overrule the shitty loss against Bama. That is fair. Because like you said, Bama's best win has been.
Bama doesn't have to face people from the good, you know, they don't have to face Georgia or Florida during, especially Georgia. I mean, can we get Bama to have a tough schedule during the regular season at least once?
Well, and, you know, and part of that is their own fault. They went, like I mentioned about 10 minutes ago, they played New Mexico State this year and were a 54-point favorite. I know that's an easy win to get your ducks in a row, but that does you jack shit for this time of the year. Like, that is a game that you could have gone and played a Minnesota, a Kansas State, a TCU, an Oregon, a USC. You could have played someone. Not that, you know, maybe not a top 10 team, but any of those teams I just mentioned are in Power 5 conferences that all would give you a respectable win. New Mexico State essentially is a blank space on your power rankings. So, you know, that's coming back to bite them right now.
It's within the SEC, too. If you look at the last decade, how many times has the SEC scheduled Alabama in the hardest cross rivalry game?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just doesn't happen.
They played Duke, New Mexico State. They went to South Carolina. Okay, I guess if you're going head to head, they beat South Carolina by 24 points. I didn't know that. Well, that is kind of something to argue, I'd say. And they beat Southern Miss 49-7. So Southern Miss is a respectable
team. And Favre doesn't play there anymore.
Southern Miss is – yeah, they got 7 wins on the year. They're not a joke, but that's not a huge one to brag about. New Mexico State's a joke, and Duke isn't that good this year. So I think the schedule is coming back to hurt them. So, I can't really disagree with that. And I think it's good that the committee is no longer looking at just the name. For Oregon, Utah, Minnesota, I just let it play out. I mean, I do enjoy these rankings, but in fairness, you know, we're going to – a lot of these teams are going to have to face each other. Or something's going to happen. So
And Oregon lost to Auburn, whereas Utah lost to an unranked team. So I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And Gophers, like, they're probably – maybe they could have been above Utah, maybe above Oregon, you know, but I don't think they've quite, you know, had all the – difficult games that, you know, they've had. I mean, you know, the Gophers, their non-conference was, you know, kind of similar to Bama. Like, it was not great by any means. They played a South Dakota State team who is a FCS team. Now, I'll admit they're respectable, but if I'm going to give Bama shit for playing New Mexico State, you know.
They had already made a run, so they had young players. The same with Fresno. Fresno's a quality team, but they had made a run last year. They had their it year. So they had to retool this year. They're not as good.
Yeah. So, no, I honestly, all the rankings seem to be pretty good. I would say, though, if you're Oklahoma, the one kind of what-if fantasy, you know, they're sitting at 10th. If you win the Big 12 and you win out, like, I would not rule them out. I know normally at this point, Chris, when we're doing this show, if a team is 10th now, it's like, oh, dude, game over. Like, you're done. Like, no way you're making it. Sitting 10th there, I mean, you know, okay, let's assume Clemson's for sure in, okay? Clemson's going to win the ACC, okay, no-brainer. Ohio State's probably going to win the Big 12, and, you know, LSU's
That'd be crazy
gonna...
if they won the Big 12 in the Big 10, you know what I mean? That's, hey, Urban Meyer never did that.
So Clemson, LSU, and Ohio State are probably pretty locked in, which leaves that four spot for some wiggle room. But, again, if you're a Sooner fan, it's not dead yet, Chris, just because winning a conference championship, as we found out over the years, holds a lot of weight.
And it seems like it's holding it more now, too, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, your one loss to K-State, K-State's not a shitty team. I would say Oklahoma losing at K-State is a better loss than Georgia against South Carolina. So those are my ranking discussions.
Nice. All right, let's get to the crafty, crappy pick of the week, sir.
So,
what do you got for me?
Well, honestly, this is maybe the first time in, like, forever there's really not a massively
horrible game
matchup. Yeah. Okay. Now, the what now, when I say that, there are two teams this week playing against each other with a 1-9 and a 1-8 record. So you're thinking, okay, these teams have played a combined 19 games. So you assume, hey, it's got to be 19 games, the teams combined have two wins. Hey, it's got to be a competitive game. But the point spread is 40.5. A 1-8 against a 1-9. Northwestern's a 40-point favorite against UMass.
UMass, that's right.
God,
I didn't see that.
I can't pick that as a crafty, crappy pick
right,
of the
week. Right, yeah, no. You can't just give it to me.
No. I mean, I could ask you to take the point spread. That gets a little tough on you.
Yeah, it gets real dicey then.
Mind you, now I'll get to one here, but Northwestern, this is a team that didn't score a touchdown for three games in a row. And they're a 40-point favorite.
Well, we got it against the spread. We got it against the spread, damn it. I'm putting it in my – I'm putting that as an honorable mention. In my article, just so you know.
So, let me. My God, this this really is a brutal week because there's for once the gods are saying, you know what, guys, we like what you're doing here, but we're not going to give you an easy one.
We're sick of you winning, even though I lost last week. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
The Bobcat, the Texas State Bobcats took care of business. All right, the best we can do, and this isn't an awful game, but it is the crafty, crappy pick of the week. We're going to ACC play. Okay, this is your home conference, brother. I'm giving you a little bit of home field advantage here, okay? We have – now, this is preferably one of the best basketball matchups, you know, because we have a head coach who's an evil man and a head coach that killed someone with his car last year. We have the Syracuse Orange Men, because I'm old school, playing the Duke Blue Devils. Syracuse is 3-6 overall this year, which honestly for them, on a serious note, is a massive letdown. I know people were really high on them because they had a great year last year, but you lose a quarterback, and all of a sudden, Dungy's gone, all of a sudden you're having a rough year. So the Syracuse Orange Men are 3-6, 0-5 in conference, playing the Duke Blue Devils, who also lost a quarterback in the NFL now. Duke is 4-5 on the year. They're 2-3 in conference, so a little bit better conference record. But, again, nothing to brag about. This game is at the Wallace Wade Stadium. Oh, my God, we're at Duke. This is how desperate it freaking was, Chris. I'm naming damn Duke football. we have an inflatable orange guy in a mascot for, like, he's literally an orange little marshmallow against, like, you know, a Satan mascot.
Satan mascot.
I mean, you know, they look like devils.
It is true.
Like
it's a blue devil. So, yeah.
So, brother, let's go to, you know, we did the SEC 2 weeks ago, and now we're going to the ACC country with one of the most hated schools of all time. Granted, I'm a Duke basketball hater. I could really care less about their football team. What does your gut say about an orange marshmallow going against a blue devil?
And speaking of Duke, you know, about the Bama-Duke thing, about 5 years ago when they scheduled that game, Duke was probably a ranked team. So we got to keep that in mind, too.
I'll say that.
I was more talking about the freaking SEC. Like, dude, schedule – now that the East is back, why don't you let Bama play one of those guys? You know what I mean? Like, it's just weak. All right, so This is bad, though. This is bad, no doubt about it. This definitely, I mean, these guys have been losing a lot.
Oh, geez. Do you see Syracuse's yards allowed?
They give up 456 yards. Jesus Christ.
Well, they're just short of 200 on the run game, so that's not that bad. And that's what I think it's going to be. That's what I think. They're just going to run. You know, they can pass a little bit, Syracuse. You know, a lot of it, actually. Yeah, dude, this is a good game. This is a really bad, good game. You know, Duke is just – well, first of all, they got ready for the season playing Bama, right? So that helps them. No, yep. And I gotta look at these like they're scrub teams because that's what you do. You look at who had the best non-conference. Oh, I gotta stop. I'm giving away my picks here. I can't give away my formula, dude. What the hell am I doing?
Uh-uh.
I'm going to go with the Dukies. By the way, at home, Wallace Wade Stadium, tickets as low as $9. You're camping out. You're camping out for a 9,000-seat arena, but you can't put some butts in the seats for $9? Jeez Louise.
Wow.
Man. I think it's going over because these teams suck. The over-under is 55. I'm going with the Duke Blue Devils. I'm staying at home. I should have stayed at home last week, and I didn't. So I'm staying at home with my non-beloved Duke Blue Devils. No, I do not. I hated them in the 90s, basketball. Only time I bet with them, they lose to frickin' Arkansas. They had Grant Hill on their team, and they lost to Arkansas, even though Scotty Thurman's the shit. And say with Big Country Williamson down low. But, yeah, I'm going Duke. I'm going with the Dukies to get back to 500, get back to 5-5, sir.
All right, well, that wraps up a very fun, festive show. It's always more fun to do these podcasts when your teams win. And I'm not going to say I'm a diehard Gopher fan because that'd be a lie. But I have been loving PJ Fleck since he's been there. Chris is enjoying this. As he said, it was cool to see a stadium sell out. I mean, the fans really haven't even bought in. This guy.
Well, it's not half Penn State either, because that's how it is with Iowa and Wisconsin games. I've been to a game where it's like 50-50. I'm like, what the hell, dude? Are we in Iowa right now?
Yeah, they had a packed place of maroon and gold, which you've like never seen. I mean, they've won 11 games in a row, but none of those wins that time were sellouts. So people are finally hopping on board. They're hopping on the boat. They're rolling the boat. So happy for that guy. If you've not seen the video, go on Twitter. PJ Fleck ran into the locker room after the game was over, I guess after his press conference, and literally crowd surfed like he was at a rock concert. That's just I love the guy.
Well, and you see how the players are waiting for him like it's their dad coming home.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? They were waiting for that moment. That was pretty cool.
It was. It was badass. So on that note, again, stay safe. Hell, we had temperatures down in 25. And now, I'm not bitching because I'm from Minnesota. I know what cold it is. But to Texas people, 25 is cold. So stay safe. Stay warm. Enjoy a great weekend of football. Hopefully the Gophers keep it rolling. Hopefully Auburn and Georgia should be a fun football game to watch. I expect a low-scoring defensive battle. And make sure you have a great week with your family. Stay safe. Thanks for always listening. The boys are out tonight. Peace.